Lovely, brought to you by Barfoot and Thompson.
On the show today, we take a look at what's happening in the renters market, plus look back at some of our favourite bits over season six. Welcome to Property Matters. Welcome along on your Monday afternoon. I'm Stephen Dello, delighted to bring you Property Matters, proudly sponsored by Barfoot and Thompson. As we take our last episode for a little while, we take our usual sort of break through winter, and we'll hopefully be back a little bit later in the year. But today I want to catch up on a bit of news, but also look back. We've had such awesome guests as part of Season 6 since the start of the year, so we thought we'd do a little recap and play you some of the best little tidbits from the episodes. But first in the news today, very much around the renters market and renters having more money in their pocket and more properties to choose from. As the latest data from realestate.co.nz shows, it's showing the supply of rental properties in New Zealand reaching the highest level for any April in almost a decade. And the total number of new rental listings on the market last month was 5,868. That's up 24% year on year. But looking back as far as April 2016 to see that the numbers then was the only time it sort of matched the current level of supply. Now, regions leading the charge with the greatest number of new listings, which are to be expected, are New Zealand's big three: Auckland, up 8.6%, Canterbury, 39% up on year on year, and Wellington, believe it or not, up 196% on last year. Now, Vanessa Williams, spokesperson for realestate.co.nz, says three key trends over the past 18 months have contributed to this rental market. The first one being short to long-term rentals. This is the number of holiday homes and Airbnbs that have been converted back from short-term rentals into long-term rentals. I'd be curious to unpack the why. You know, is it the lack of tourists taking these short-term rentals now, or is it perhaps the damage or the upkeep or the hassle involved in running those properties? Be curious on your thoughts. Second thing Vanessa says is the cost of living crisis. When we look back at our typical rental demographic, those aged 18 to 25, they're doing one of two things. They're either staying at home with their family longer because of the cost of living, or departing New Zealand's shores and moving overseas. The third one is investors holding tight. A slower sales market over the last 2.5 years has seen investors holding on to their properties. Further good news for renters is the softening in rental price, with the national average down by $14 per week year on year. The capital city had one of the highest falls in rental prices, with a year on year reduction of 7.2%, or $50 per week. Subsequent rate falls occurred in Central North Island and Taranaki. Now, Vanessa Williams says $14 extra in a tenant's pocket per week over a 52-week period can result in a savings upwards of $700. So that's a nice three-seat sofa for the flat, or a weekend away, I guess. Now, Central Otago and Lakes are bucking the trend, because as to be expected, there's always a region that does this, and Central Otago and Lakes reported an all-time high with an average rent price of $870 per week in April. Although the region's 148 new listings reported in April was a 22.1% drop from the 190 listings in March, the region's April numbers reflect a 35.8% year-on-year increase. Now, Central Otago and Lakes rental activity corresponds with the sales property data, which confirms the region's reputation as one of the most highly valued markets in the country. So it's not surprising to see this region continue to command top dollar with its beautiful homes, attractive lifestyle and strong tourist market. A big thank you to realestate.co.nz for always sending us all the updates on the data. We appreciate it. Thank you. Now, we kicked off this season with a fabulous guest, a return guest, Nicole Lewis. She is the author of Property Quadrants, and she came on to chat a little bit about that, but then her second book, No Money Deals. I caught up with Nicole and asked her, first of all, to talk about the key concepts in her main book, Property Quadrants.
Yes, that. And I tend to think everyone deserves a house. But the question is, how do we get there? So I looked at it thinking, well, property actually fits into four quadrants. So quadrant one is our family home, And that's when we make an emotional purchase. You know, there's the family home is something you want, a specific area, a specific type of house. You're going to bring your family up there. You know, if you think about your family home when you grew up, it grabs you by the heartstrings. It's emotional. And the good old Kiwi way is we tend to buy our first home and then we work really hard and we pay our mortgage down. The property goes up in value. And then we think, ooh, let's get an investment property. And that's where it all goes a bit wrong because we don't understand. It's a very different set of criteria. So what we should be doing is going into quadrant four, where we buy a passive income property, because when the world turns to custard, like it does, COVID and things like that happen, and cash gets short, what you've got to have is cash flow, money coming in, and then you're safe. And that's what quadrant, that's what quadrant four is all about, positive, passive cash flow. How do we do that? We can use quadrant three, which is what No Money Deals is all about, how to make money using property to buy property.
Right.
And then once we've finished building our passive and active income, we can go to quadrant two, which is where we buy a high-end property with a big capital gain or a holiday home or student accommodation for our kids off to university or help our kids into their first home, that sort of thing, instead of using it as the mistake quadrant where you buy your first investment and it makes you cash poor because it's sucking all the money out of your paycheck every week.
Brilliant. So explain then the no money deal.
Yeah.
How many properties do we have to own, or where does that sit to be able to safely make the no money deals?
We don't have to own anything. You can start there. It's a really good question. Most people don't know about that. You know, they have the myth that they think they have to have hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy a property. And if you're going to buy quadrant one, your family home, that's true. And actually, I was inspired here on Property Matters when we were sitting on the panel, and I remember that someone had just helped their child into their first home, and I thought, now that's cool for the percentage of people that have the bank of mum and dad.
Yeah.
But what about all those that don't? How do we help them? That was the inspiration behind this book. Because what they don't know is you can start with doing something that costs you absolutely nothing and has no risk to make a large lump sum of money. Because if you buy properties are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, you could do something really simple like buy a property for a property flipper and pass it on to them to do the work, and they can pay you $10,000 or $20,000 as a finder's fee. Now, that's how long does it take you to save $10,000 from your wages?
Yeah.
Whereas you can do a deal like that in a couple of weeks. So, you know, you can actually use property to make substantial, and that's the small end of the scale.
Yeah.
You know, that's the minute money that you can make, and then it can go up to there, look, sky's the limit.
So take us through the book then. Walk us through the journey. Obviously, you kick off talking a little bit about yourself, your own journey, and then I love the title, Are You a Delayed Spender?
Yeah, well, you see, I took the tack between my journey and my friend Delwyn. Delwyn and I were friends at primary school, and we used to love playing Monopoly. And it was just interesting as I thought about how I write this book that our lives ended up going in very different directions. And so Delwyn and I, our parents, both taught us to save. And what save means, and I, interestingly enough, my niece got her first job and she started saving. And I said to her, oh, where do you put your money? Oh, I just put it into a savings account. I said, and you earn interest on that? No. And I'm thinking, so she, sorry, my dear niece, but she's really a delayed spender. So what's the difference? So when we save, we put, the money doesn't work for us, okay? It just, now you might say I'll put it in an interest-bearing account, or like me, my mum taught me to put it in a term deposit, woohoo, you know.
Did you have bonus bonds? Were you a bonus bond person?
No, my grandparents had bonus bonds though, but I don't know, anyway, different story. So, you know, so that was sort of like, and then you earn a little bit of interest. But what I discovered when I looked at my life and I looked at Delwyn's life, you know, 20 years down the track, was that her savings eroded. Because what it is if you are like a huge percentage of the population, you actually spend that money. And sometimes you spend it, unfortunately, your car breaks down or your washing machine breaks down or whatever and you have to replace it. Or sometimes you just spend it on life. You want to go on a trip, you want to buy the latest iPhone, you want a car, and you go, oh, I've got that money.
That's what my savings
are for. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
Correct. And so it's actually just delayed spending versus having an investing mindset where you make your money work for you. So here's an example. My son, Jacob, he's 20. Just finished university, he's got his BCom, he finished last year. And so what I taught him to do, and he was fortunate, he studied at Auckland University and he lived at home. And you get some allowance, he'll probably go, oh, Mum, I've told you 1,000 times, some allowance, $300 a week. And I said to him, take that allowance. He goes, oh, why? That adds to my student loan. I said, yes, but your student loan is interest free. Get that allowance, plumb it into your managed funds account. Okay, so fast forward 3 years, he's finished his degree. He's got $45,000 in his managed funds account and a student debt of $35,000. So that's what I mean by investor mindset. That money has worked for him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he said, so then it's like, well, he goes, should I pay my student loan off? Now, everyone will say, yes. And I go, no, it's interest free. Why would you take money that's making you between 15 and 20% per annum to pay off something that's costing you nothing in this cycle?
Money cycle's different.
So we'll talk about that later. But, you know, managed funds, they can dip as they did in 2022. But we're in a growth cycle at the moment. Yeah, so that's the difference. Make your money work for you.
And in your book, you talk about parking your emotions.
Yes.
Talk me through that.
Okay. So property is emotional, no matter which quadrant you are in. And actually, that chapter wasn't even going to be in the book to start with. But when I was discussing it all with my writing coach, Michelle, she said, you know what? We actually have to put that in there because it's really prevalent. And it is true. You do get emotional at the beginning and at the end of every property deal. Like when you're going to put a property on paper, you can be so emotional, like, whoa, oh my gosh, I'm getting it, okay. And the real estate agent is there to make their commissions. Agents, love you to bits, but, you know, let's face it.
They're going to add to your emotions because they're excited. They're getting paid.
Exactly. And they want to get the best for the vendor and the best for you. So they'll sort of say, pay a bit more, put a high, and you will because you want it. And so sometimes if you're in quadrant three, which we are in no money deals, that doesn't help you. That can lead you to losing money. And so the second time you become emotional is at the end of the project when it's finished. This happens to me every time. I hand my property over to the real estate agent to do their job and I go, oh, what if it's not going to sell? Or, oh, what if it sits there too long? Or I've got money going out the door paying the mortgage every month. Every time. It's like, for goodness sake. And so what you've got to do is park your emotions. Every property sells. You've picked a top real estate agent. Let them do their job. Park your emotions. Easier said than done.
Yeah. I was going to say, what have you taught yourself writing the book? Yeah.
And funnily enough, that's where the chapter came from.
Nice.
Because in discussing it with my writing coach, because I had a deal on the go, she goes, oh, wait, but you've just parked your emotions doing all this. And I was like, yeah, well, we've got to put that in the book.
Brilliant.
I said, do we? Yes, it's highly relevant to realise when your emotions are inhibiting your deal or when you're letting yourself go into the down lens because you're letting your emotions go crazy or worrying about something that's not going to happen.
Now, you mentioned earlier, you sort of touched on it, that, you know, you've got some stories in the book, some of which have come from your original Property Quadrants book. Tell us, I guess, a little bit about these stories and the people behind them and how they've inspired you to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, like I said, I ended up having people reach out to me. So I do mentoring. I don't advertise it. People just get hold of me. They book a call with me on Calendly. We talk about their situation and what they want to achieve. And some of them will want some mentoring and I'll think we're a fit. So there's three stories in there. There's Jesse, there's Angela, and there's Ryan. There's three of my mentoring clients. And I'm so, sort of like, if I can say, proud of them. They've done such an incredibly good job, and I'm really excited to share their stories because they also tell the readers exactly how they did everything. So Jesse's story in there, he had $34,000, and he's like, right, how do I start with that? So in the book, his story's in there and exactly how we got him a property that was worth $850,000 last year. It would have gone up in value now for $34,000. And
love it. I just love chatting to Nicole. She's got lots of examples in her book. So do go and check out both Property Quadrants and No Money Deals. Now, I talked at the start of the season about these three fabulous women that we get on every year. And it's Nicole, Lewis, Jamie James and Tapri Hewitt. And this time we got them bang one after another. And I loved catching up with Jamie James. She's financial and insurance advisor, recently back from overseas, and had really been inspired by conferences and things she'd done, I think especially in Canada, and about the world of AI and the part that it will play on people's careers and in their health. Plus, we chatted about stress testing your investment and financial portfolio. I mean, it is scary. What do you say to somebody who listens to this right now and is sitting in fear of where it's going? Perhaps somebody young into the workforce going, hang on, you know, I've still got a whole lifetime ahead, and if it's moving at this speed, you say pivot and change, but I don't know where I'm going to train in, or, you know, because we kind of haven't got all that lined up yet. Mm-hmm. Like our universities, our colleges, our high schools, they're not ready to be educating the future self to go out into this world, are they?
No, and I 100% agree with you on that. But there is a thing, right, like, if you imagine somebody 20 years ago trying to explain to us what an iPhone was, that would have blown our mind and probably disturbed us, going, what does this mean for me? But now we all have one and most of us can't do without it. We as humans, we get used to things very easily.
And we adapt quicker than we realise sometimes.
We do. Yeah. We do. And they did talk about that. They said, you know, there's going to come a point that, you know, it's going to be normal to see a humanoid getting groceries. It's going to be normal to see a humanoid going out and about and doing things. But really the biggest takeaway from that was how to master change. You can anticipate and you can thrive.
So is that your number three?
This is number three.
Take it away.
Well, it's like life, right? She moves, it grows, it evolves, it changes with everything. AI, it's markets, it's, you know, your bank account moves, evolves, it changes, the value of your property, your health, everything. So people who win in times of massive change aren't the ones who react. They're the ones who anticipate. And anticipation requires strategy. So we talked about how there's a strong correlation between, you know, financial stress and your health. If you get sick, that can impact your health and your financial well-being. And if that's not resilient and strong and it takes a hit, then that can impact your health and your well-being. So let's look at building your wealth in the same way that you do and that you approach with your health. So here's a safer way. Here's an acronym, an easy one to remember. Let's start with S. Stress test. Stress test your portfolio. In fact, let's play a game. If you're near a piece of paper and a pen, or if you're driving, that's okay, just imagine this. Jot down your two biggest assets that you have right now. So for some people, this might be their property portfolio and crypto. For some people, it might be their income and their family home. But just jot down your two biggest assets. Then ask yourself these two questions. Could I survive a 50% hit? So Ray Dalio talks about every single asset class will drop 50 to 70% at least once in your lifetime. So even if you could stress test your portfolio, taking a hit at 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%, where do you start feeling like you want to vomit? You know, where's that tension in your body? And then start making plans around that. Mm-hmm. For example, let's go into A, which is act now. So I used to have a limiting belief that kept me financially stuck. And that limiting belief was, I'll save and I'll invest when I earn more. Well, the reality is if you're not saving and investing now, you probably won't when you earn more. You'll just find more ways to spend it. So even small, even if it's just $5, $5 a week, because it's not about the amount, it's about the behavior. This is talking about the patterns and the principles, right? That it, the small, consistent saving and investing has massive returns down the line. So just get into that habit and start flexing there. And then you get stronger and fitter and resilient. Then we go on to F, which is flexible assets. So I had another limiting belief because I was brought up with property. I bought my first home after working three jobs at age 24. And that limiting belief that did keep me financially stuck was that property is the only way to make wealth. What we learned, or the truth is that wealth creation comes from a mix of owning different income earning assets. And we've all felt when the property market drops, what does that do to your financial well-being? And if you've only got property, that can have severe consequences. Like I had a client who had 13 rental properties in Christchurch. Christchurch earthquakes happened. 9 of them got completely wiped out. So the major impacts to her property portfolio or to her wealth portfolio because she didn't have anything else. So it's thinking about diversifying. An example is we just talked about smartphones.
Yep.
Most people have a smartphone. If you bought an iPhone, so the first iPhone came out, I think, in 2007. So if you bought that iPhone and then you upgraded your iPhone every single year, by last year you would have spent $22,000. And all you would have to show for that is a pile of old iPhones. But if you had have invested that into, if you had have become an owner of Apple and you bought Apple stocks, you would have over $300,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a mind shift, right? From being a consumer to being an owner. Mm. It's diversifying your portfolio into other income earning assets. Again, so it's
Amazing. Sorry to cut you off there, Jamie, but just so much information. And our third person in the fabulous trio was mortgage broker and advisor Tapri Hewitt. Now, I started off the interview hearing how her business is growing and how that's been impacted by the current market and current interest rates. And tell us what's been happening in your business space since we last caught up.
So, yes, business has started to pick up, which is great. We have a lot more applications in the pipeline, people building their confidence to purchase property. I mean, we had last year quite a few buyers in the market just sitting on their pre-approvals, hoping that interest rates would decrease even more. For us, we are saying to them, you know, there's never a right time, but we feel there's so much stock on the market, interest rates have decreased significantly, and now is a great time to get on the property ladder.
You mentioned people sitting on their pre-approvals. How long does a pre-approval last for? And is it easily renewed or do you start the whole process again?
A pre-approval generally lasts for 90 days. You can renew it once with just obtaining minimal information, just updating pay slips and things like that. But thereafter, after the 6 months, you need to go through the full application process again. So what we say, and what I've started to do now, is actually ask people what their timeframes are. If they are ready to go, then we will seek the pre-approval, we'll obtain the pre-approval on their behalf. But if they're not quite ready, then we want to understand why that is and what that looks like.
So perhaps they're clearing off some final debts, etc. You'd say, hang fire and come to us when you're ready to go.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And since we last caught up, have you seen a change in the lending space when it comes to banks? You know, we went through some interesting times a couple of years ago with what they were looking for or approving. What is it like at the moment?
We've seen a significant change with the bank's approval process. So one thing that definitely springs to mind and makes a massive difference when it comes to affordability is the stress test rates. So when customers are applying for a loan, the bank have a test rate that they apply. About 6 months ago, it was around about 8.95%. Now the test rate has dropped to 7.25%. So this is a significant change in that people can afford to borrow more. Also, people that weren't able to get onto the property ladder purely because of affordability, now reassessing their finances, they can actually afford. Yeah, they can afford to get on the property ladder, which is great.
When you say the stress test at 7 or 8%, what does that 7 or 8% mean?
Yep, so the 7 or 8% is the difference between a customer. So let me give you an example, Stephen. So we've got a household income of $200,000 and now they can afford $1.3 million, or just over $1.3 million, whereas when the stress test rates were at 9%, it was like $200,000 less.
Yeah.
So a significant difference.
Especially if you're buying in our big cities.
Yeah.
That's quite significant.
So now it's around about six to seven times, not quite seven times the income, whereas previously at the 8.95% was around about 5 to 5.5%. Sorry, 5.5 times your income.
So is now a good time for first home buyers? Let's focus on them for a little bit tonight. Tell us, where's the world sitting for them?
Now is definitely a great time to purchase, purely because there is a lot of stock on the market at present. So they've got, our first home buyers have a lot to choose from. There's not as much competition. People are still sitting on the fence, like in terms of their pre-approvals, are still hanging back. We don't want our first home buyers to experience what they experienced back in late 2020 and 2021, where the market just went nuts, interest rates reduced down to 2.5%, and therefore a lot more affordability, a lot more people on the property ladder, a lot more competition, and that created a frenzy, and that house prices just skyrocketed.
So if someone's listening and starting to just have that first step on getting on the ladder there, what should they be thinking about? How do they prepare for their first mortgage or first mortgage application?
So first and foremost, what I've said is speak to your mortgage advisor. Speak to a mortgage advisor and speak to them about your specific financial situation. So we have had people trying to save their deposits and not sure if their income was, was meeting the bank criteria. And, they've been waiting for 6 months to 1 year, and yet they were ready a year ago. So what we say, first and foremost, is speak to a mortgage advisor, understand what you need for your particular situation. So what we say is, KiwiSaver, if you're first starting out employment, make sure you join your KiwiSaver and your employer will contribute 3% of the KiwiSaver. If you can, increase your KiwiSaver contributions. It's compulsory savings. You can't get it out unless you buy your first home or retirement or cases of hardship, which we don't want to see. So that's first and foremost. Also, living off one income, so saving for your deposit, having a look at whether you can move home with parents or relatives, let them know what your financial goal is. So that is really key. That is one thing that I did when I was first starting out, and I see a lot of people who are wanting to jump on the first home buyer's property ladder. What they're doing is moving in with parents, resetting their finances, living off one income, and saving one income.
I spoke to a friend the other day whose kids are still home in their mid-20s, and I made the comment, oh, what's that like? They said, well, we didn't have spare cash to give them towards a deposit, but we wanted to help. So we said, you can live here rent-free and we'll feed you. That's our contribution to your deposit. Yes. And you've got 5 years of that. And I thought, actually, that's a really cool way of looking at it.
It is a really cool way.
It is a way of parents helping it with a deposit.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Fabulous. Tarpery Hewitt, mortgage broker and advisor. Just love all three of them coming onto the show each year and giving us their wisdom and advice. They're all available online. Look them up. Get their books, get their information, and get them to get involved in your financial journey. Now, a very different shift during the year. We met a young man by the name of Jesse Mayo, who is a cadet in Barfoot and Thompson's Property Management Academy, but he came from a professional sporting background. We had a chat about being a professional athlete, but in a sport where your body can't physically keep going forever, so he changed careers to property management. Let's first of all quickly recap his sports journey.
Yeah.
So talk us through that journey from sort of kicking that boxing career off. How old were you?
When I had my first fight, I was 23.
Okay.
So now I'm 33, so it's about 10 years.
Yeah, cool. And what were some of the sort of the highlights, first of all, along that journey?
So I had some pretty good highlights. With my amateur career, I got up to the Golden Gloves and took part in one of the most prestigious tournaments that you have in boxing, which was awesome. And then I managed to fight overseas, which is obviously something really cool as well. But on the same side of that, I managed to fight at Spark Arena once upon a time and be in the spotlight a little bit,
yeah,
and feel like what that was like. The fight didn't really go according to how I'd like it to, but just to be on the world stage like that and have all eyes on you was really cool. So, that was definitely one of my highlights.
Was there certain achievements that sort of stand above the rest? Like, is there a trophy cabinet at home that you're going, that I will never forget?
Yes, obviously it comes with a lot of medals and things like that too. But that's one thing that sort of... That's one thing that I haven't actually achieved is a championship yet. But in saying that, it's kind of like one of those things that has a little bit of unfinished business.
Mm.
But, you know, at the same side of that, I'm enjoying what I'm doing now. And who knows, we might go back to that later. I'm never saying never, but... Uh-huh. If it's not in the immediate future, it's not really a big deal.
Okay, we'll unpack that one a little bit later. And we certainly did unpack, and we had a great chat with Jesse, and his interview goes in to talk about that journey into property management and real estate and how professional sports athletes need to have that plan B for when it is time to hang up the hockey sticks or the wrestling gloves and go into something else. And real estate certainly suits a lot of them. Download his full episode. It's worth a listen. Available. All our episodes are available on all your favourite podcast sites. And towards the end of the season so far, we had the wonderful real estate guru, as I call him, David Palfreyman. Now, we were chatting about whether he felt auctions was still a great way to sell.
Put it this way, if anyone who's a mate of mine hears this question, they know what I'm going to say. But I would say I'm agnostic. I think I just had a catch up with a friend of mine who's going to sell. I think, you know, if you've different salespeople do tend to prefer different methods. However, knowing what I know and having been across a great scale of transactions now, I would absolutely use auction. Almost more important in the current environment than, and most people think auction is the right method for a hot market, and I mean, it's very visible why that is the case. But in a tougher market, or just simply one that more where there's more stock and it tends to favour the buyer a little bit, I think it's even more important, because auction takes a little bit of power away from the buyer in the sense that they can't make a love letter. They can't write you a love letter without substance. In other words, they can't put an offer in on a property saying subject to the sale of our property, which they've not even had appraised, let alone put on the market yet, and they think might be worth $2 million when in fact it's only 1.5. And there's other cases where, you know, sellers have accepted an offer like that with good numbers written on it, but the property doesn't even go to the market because the person who, anyway. So I think dealing with cash, is always a preference. But the other thing that happens, and particularly this is interesting in this marketplace, is that where buyers are given that confidence of transparency, in some cases they'll extend. And I mean, let's be transparent. This is probably like maybe one out of 20 auctions at the moment, but still one out of 20, that's a 5% chance, is like winning the lottery. Like, it just goes and keeps going. And everyone in that room, even the buyers in some cases, know that they are paying too much almost, you know what I mean? It's hard for them to say that it's too much because there's a guy $500 behind. Yeah. But at the same token, that's a sale that's spiked on the upward trend. And so I think you give yourself the chance of that and you give yourself good information. And in many cases, and I would say this is, you know, more likely than not, I reckon at the moment clearance rates are probably fluctuating between the 30 to 40% under the hammer, which means more often than not, it's not actually sold on the day. But I would say of the balance of that, maybe, 60% there or 70% that is now available post-auction. For the ones who have understood the market, they're then pricing appropriately and are generally transacting pretty promptly afterwards. And so they are one of those sales that actually transacts as opposed to the ones that sit there. And I think you don't, as an owner, you don't have to sell your property. Mm-hmm. But if you do intend to sell it, you want to work out as quickly as possible and as accurately as possible what an appropriate level to do that is and give yourself the benefit of upside.
Mm. In this world of, you know, AI technology and social media and everything sort of thrown at us in that technical space these days, if we think back to those call centre days, is there still room for the old school methods? Are we still able to knock on a door and try and, you know, coax some business, do those cold calls? Do those old school ways still work?
100%.
Great.
Yeah. Well, like, get the call centre one.
Yeah.
Now, there are now, and you could, for people at home listening, watching, check out Air AI, AIR AI, and there are other providers, and there are some that are niche specifically to real estate, but these are effectively AI powered voice bots that are really realistic and have a conversation. You know, that work can, that outbound work on the phone, I think it's either here or almost here that those roles will be replaced by AI. What is much harder to replace is the, once the connection's been made and you've actually been to meet those people and view the home and, you know, talk strategically, now you're their advisor. That's very hard to replace, because you're there. There's everything about the dynamic that you create. And so I think the follow-up, sure, you can have an AI catch, if you like, and prevent some leakage. Mm. But to really progress people intelligently, I think we're still better at this point.
Yeah.
How much longer for? You know, I hope it's for quite a while, but you never know. And maybe I shouldn't be hoping it's for, because who knows? But I would say door knocking, and this is an interesting one. I love some people to put on the comments of your podcast or indeed on the chat here. Like, when was the last time you had an agent knock at your door? I mean, I haven't had anyone on Waiheke. I haven't had anyone in the city. Where was I before that? In this, Cardwell Street. Never had anyone there. I mean, maybe I'm not home enough. But I just think, like, you want to communicate on the least crowded channel.
Yeah.
And particularly if you're a salesperson, I think it's a sensible strategy to become a specialist in an area. It makes it much easier to speak with authority. It's much easier to be a big fish in a small pond. And the easiest way, the great thing and the unusual thing in some respects about real estate is that the inventory is all owned by people. In other words, the houses all are owned by people, and all those people, it's a physical locality, and either it's a rental property, in which case you can track the owners down a different way, or they live there, and so it's quite easy to build up a contact base of people that are specific to the area that you want to specialise in. So I would say if I went to an area where I knew no one, I would probably do a mixture of content that demonstrated my expertise in that area, so people knew that I knew what I was talking about, and I'd get out and go and meet the people that live there.
Brilliant. Now, you... So good. Thank you, David. Now, we had other fantastic guests so far in Season 6, including the amazing Olivia McIver talking about the social media space, Rachel O'Sullivan with some top tips for recruitment, plus we caught up with the teams from Barfoot & Thompson, Pamua and Te Atatū. So do check them out on your favourite podcast site. Hey, we're going to take a break now through the winter months. We hope to catch you a little later in the year. It's not all locked in yet, but fingers crossed we'll be back. But just in case we're not, we do want to say a massive thank you to Barfoot & Thompson, especially Paul and the design team who looks after all our graphics each week, the fabulous marketing team called Done By, which is Olivia McIver's own business, who put out all our information throughout the week, to the fabulous team here at Planet FM who look after us and host us in this space. We really do appreciate it. Thanks to our guests, Nicole Lewis, Jamie James, Tapri Hewitt, David Palfreyman, Jesse Mayo, Rachel O'Sullivan, Olivia McIver, and the teams from Barfoot & Thompson, Pamua and Te Atatū. Catch all our podcasts on your favourite site, Spotify, Apple, Samsung, YouTube, iHeartRadio. They're there for you to listen to. I'm Stephen Dello. Thanks so much for tuning in. Take care. We'll catch you again sometime, I hope soon. Bye-bye. Property Matters.